Hi, how are you? Great. These are all girls. Humphrey?
Good afternoon. I'll call to order the meeting of the State Government Budget Division for Wednesday, January 17th, 2007. We do not have a quorum right now, but we will not be taking any votes at this committee meeting. We're going to be having a presentation of the plans to the state capitol renovation. And then after the presentation and after any questions, I'll adjourn the meeting, but then members need to stick around because we're going to go downstairs on a tour of the basement of the building so you can actually see some of the things that we're talking about here. So we'll turn it over to Commissioner Badgerill.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you so much for this opportunity. You may recall that in last year's bonding bill, there was $1 million, which was the second increment of funding for design, schematic design for a renovation of the interior of the Capitol. We had selected, after a national competition, the firm of Hamel, Green, and Abramson, who is part of a national team partnered with Schooley Caldwell out of Ohio that does a number of state capitals. So what we're here today to tell you about is the work of that schematic design and began to set the foundation for the need for a very sizable renovation of this capital. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Bjornberg.
Just one question I've got, Commissioner. I don't recall the exact language, but did we put any conditions or parameters on how this was to be done, or was it pretty open-ended?
Mr. Chair and members, actually there was early, throughout the entire legislative session, it was restricted to the east wing of the Capitol, because at that time the notion was we were going to do this wing by wing. Mm-hmm. As we got into it, not very far, we realized that the mechanical systems which need replacing in the Capitol do not run vertically, they run horizontally, and so it's really not practical to do it wing by wing. And in the last moments of the bonding conference committee, we took out and were successful in getting Chairman Langseth to take out the language that restricted it to the east wing. So the language simply says we would complete the schematic or work on progress with the schematic design for the interior renovation of the Capitol as a whole.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Michael Bjornberg. I'm a project manager with Hamel, Green, and Abramson on the Capitol restoration.
Should we turn that? Let the lights turn down, members, so you can see.
Yes, please.
Let's turn the lights
particularly
down.
These. If we can get these turned down.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
I'm going to give you a PowerPoint on this project and some background history. This is the agenda, so if you find your have questions ahead, just be mindful of the pieces, but please feel free to ask questions. I'll give you some historical background, some project description. We'll talk about some of the existing building issues that we found. We'll talk about benchmarking of other capital projects. We'll look at our design concept and then the implementation of that and then our ramifications for scope, schedule, and budget. Okay? This is Cass Gilbert's sketch, 1896, for the state capitol. Most of you knew Cass Gilbert did a lot of small projects here. This was his first monumental project. This launched his career nationally. He went on to New York City to design, among things, Woolworth Building, which was the tallest building in the world at the time. Also then U.S. Supreme Court, among many other monumental buildings. So incredible architect and incredible project. When it started out, it was a small notion for a state capitol. And then together with the legislature, they came up with a bold concept that this building would be a state-of-the-art, most modern building in the state. It would demonstrate Minnesota as a land of progress, permanence, and national prominence. So a pretty amazing notion. And it did do that. This is a building. It's a gorgeous building, Georgia marble. At the time it was built, it was the first fully electrified building in the state. It had elevators. It had telephones. It had fireproof construction. Had the first freestanding boiler power plant for the building. So it was everything Minnesota knew and everything the country knew for technology at the time. It's not that anymore. But it's still a gorgeous building. It's considered one of the top state capitol buildings in the country. So we started the project about a year ago. And as we got into it, we looked at tried to understand what the project was about. It was an interior restoration. You walk into the building, these are the kind of images you see, you're all familiar with. It's a gorgeous building, beautiful work of art. It's hard to walk into this and tell somebody this building needs significant restoration and renovation. But it's everything that's behind the wonderful stones and marbles from around the world that really needs that renovation. It's all the infrastructure that supports this building that's in dire need. It's 40 years old for most of the mechanical systems, so it's time for it. So we'll go through some of that. So these are the things we found as we looked through it. Had inefficient, aging mechanical systems. A lot of them, as you'll see them on our tour, 1960s to the newest stuff is latter 1980s, 40 years old, and that's end of the lifespan for it. It's no longer efficient. The heating, venting, and air conditioning no longer meet current needs. Communication and technology systems, you'll see some of those. Some of it's there. Some of it's not quite up to date. A lot of it's abandoned in place, really needs to be organized better. It's certainly not state-of-the-art now. Safety and security, much has changed since 2001 and post 9/11. I'll show you some of those things later on. It's not a fully accessible building. That's something the state does require in new construction. There's many signs of physical deterioration and damage. You'll see a lot of that on the third floor, and I'll show you more of that on our tour. Inadequate and inefficient space, lack of adequate hearing rooms and office space. This is a good one. This is typical of what you see in hearing rooms around the building. Lots of columns, so this works fine. This does not. The viewers have a very difficult time in these, and it is really about public participation. Office space is inadequate, and lack of visitor services and amenities. 2001 pre-design identified a need for hearing rooms and office space in this building and identified a couple options. One was a freestanding state office building located north of this Capitol, and another one was to identify swing space somewhere on the Capitol complex. As we got into it, we looked at what some of the other solutions might be, understanding there really wasn't an appetite for a new state office building. So mechanical systems. This is today's building infrastructure, and you'll see some of these places. Some of these are very difficult to get at. This one you'll see, we did this on a tour yesterday. This actually takes you to the main fire control panel. You step over this fire pump and go back in there, so that's the main shutoff and system for the building. You'll see some of these spaces. This is some of the technology and wiring systems for the building, and these are other piping and chilled water systems for the building, so it will be interesting. This is from the Kansas State Capitol. Our partners in this project, Schooley Caldwell, we have some representatives here today, are out of Ohio working on three state capitals, Ohio Capitol, Kansas Capitol, and Utah. We used Kansas one for modeling. This is Kansas mechanical rooms. This is what a mechanical room should look like. And as you think of this image as we go through some of the spaces today, what these are new vaults outside the building, allowed to be as big as they need. They're safe, they're secure. Simple concrete construction, and then you can see here they neck down and go into the building this way. So you will see these kinds of spaces jammed into rooms that size as we go on our tour. Safety and security. This is right outside here, the loading dock, and this is fresh air intake. And this is the typical way fresh air comes into this building. We'll go in some of those, and I'll show you what they look like below the ground. It's also a high security risk. The building, we feel, is as vulnerable from the outside as in the inside. You could put the building at security risk with this fresh air intakes where they are. Also, people generally know when there's a truck at the loading dock because they can smell it. So this is something we're really taking a look at how we can do differently. Vehicle proximity and access. As convenient it is to park up next to the building, it is a security risk. As convenient it is to drop things off in this area, also a security risk. So Homeland Security has said we need to look at a standoff distance, move vehicles away from the building. So we've looked at what some of those options are as well. And then there's the basement, which we'll go in and look. Here's some of those wires and communication systems, very vulnerable, as well as these spaces really aren't that nice of spaces. We've got ductwork across. We've got things stored in corridors that should not be in there. We'll take a look at some of those, and we'll also take a look at what might be. Physical deterioration. We're all familiar with the third floor, the water damage up there. We'll show you some areas down on the lower levels where there's also ongoing water damage. So that water is moving all the way through all the floors of this building. It's rainwater. It's fresh water. It's also brown water from the building. The rain leaders and storm drains run through the walls of this building. A lot of them are 100 years old. It's time for replacement. Most of those do leak. So you can get water puddles like this down below when it's not raining out at all. Mechanical equipment's leak. And then you have ongoing deterioration. And what's been interesting as we've gotten into this, since the mid-1980s, 60 to 70% of the funds allocated for this capital have been quick emergency fix projects, not comprehensive long-term solutions, but something's broke, fix it, and then move on. We need to get beyond that. Inadequate and inefficient space. I've talked about the conference, the hearing rooms. This may very well be this room here. That's typical, as well as G15 being the largest hearing room, which has, of course, the most columns. We've looked at better ways to lay out additional hearing rooms in this capital, and I'll show you some of those as we get into the design. So we've looked at making the building more usable for what it is, which is a daily function of business, for the public access as well. When this building was first built 100 years ago, as a legislature, all your business took place at your desk out on the floor. That was your office. Constituent wanted to come in and see you, that's where they come and see you. So if you can imagine, take all your office functions, put it at that desk. That's how this building was laid out and started out. It's not like that anymore. But what's happened is it was never really comprehensively said, let's acknowledge how business happens, the business of politics happens these days, and then start the building that way. And that's what we're advocating. Visitor accommodations, again, similar. You know, when they built these, they never really thought they would be the big tourist attraction they were. They were simple. People would come. The state's grown significantly. This is the visitor entrance to the building. It's also, as you go through this area, you're right into the rotunda. So we have school bus loads of kids, so that's their first point of entry into the building. It's right into the rotunda space. This is also the first point of security. There was an individual a few months ago who came in with a machete and asked where the governor's office was. These people are really not trained to deal with that kind of thing. We're looking at better ways to accommodate the visitors, the hundreds of thousands of visitors that come to this building every day. Here's some examples of some of the spaces you might see. We're building where spaces are doing multiple functions. They're storage. They're mechanical rooms. They're a little bit of everything. They're corridors as you go through some of those. This we went through yesterday, corridor to the underneath the south stairs. So you maneuver through all this stuff to get to places. And accessibility. Currently, the Senate chambers and Supreme Court chambers are not accessible. Very few bathrooms are accessible in this building. There is a, I think it's very difficult to find men's and women's bathrooms in this building. We're proposing full accessible men's and women's bathrooms on every floor of this building in the same identifiable locations on each floor. So kind of what we started with was the building, it was acknowledged it needed hearing rooms, it needed office space, it needed additional space. We need to accommodate restrooms. We need to accommodate exit stairs. Currently, there are no enclosed exit stairs in this building, which is code requirement. And then the additional mechanical spaces. Mechanical requirements today as compared to 40 years ago are four times the air volume. So if you imagine those ducts getting four times as big. So a shortage of space. It's a historic building. We do not want to impact the historic nature of the building. So we look at how do you add space to the building. And the National Park Service gives us guidelines on that. One way is an exterior addition. You could do a wing to the building. Very difficult building to do a wing to it, space-wise and architecturally without impacting it. Another way to do an exterior addition is a freestanding building, state office building being one of those, judicial center being one of those. So you could say, well, let's do another building, another state office building. But again, we said there really was no appetite for that, and nor did we necessarily want to take all those functions, the hearing rooms, public functions, part of doing government of business, away from the building and make this a museum. Another one is found space. And found space, I think the easiest example to understand what found space is you think of the Rathskeller and then the Rathskeller kitchen that was recently added. The kitchen was added underneath the north stair. Space that was there utilized no visual impact from the outside. There are examples of that. South stair is one opportunity for doing that. And then the whole lowest level, the basement level of this building, we feel can be found space. We can better utilize it for functions other than what they're being used now. And then lastly, underground. And you'll see examples of this across the country. Most of the capitals are about that same age, 100 years old, give or take, all looking at the same kinds of things. How do I get more office space? How do I get more visitor center space? How do I address security concerns, cafeteria space? And how do I address the whole visitor experience? So they look at underground opportunities. So those are our three. We've explored the second two. United States Capitol, many exterior additions, as well as currently undergoing underground addition, largely visitor center. And you can imagine the volume of visitors who come to this building, as well as the security concerns. So you get in this one all the visitor amenities, and it's your point of entry. These little new entrances happen here. Modest underground entrances or modest at-grade entrances into the building, into this whole underground area. But you've got great halls. You've got assembly areas. You've got three lines of security as you move into the state capitol itself. And you've got expansion space for the House and Senate. Very large. This one's currently at about, I think I read last week, about $600 million. Virginia State Capitol, building of Thomas Jefferson's, half the size of our Capitol building. It's had a couple additions, but you know this little slice here, that's one of them, you know, on each side of here. Very small addition, so very small Capitol building. Also currently undergoing an expansion, trying to understand how they get the spaces they need in this smaller building and yet not affect Jefferson's Temple on the Hill aesthetic. So they also looked at an underground addition, and this is undergoing. This is a sketch. Again, modest entrance at grade. Visitors come in through here and then move up through the building, existing building. Kansas, as I said before, our partner Schooley Caldwell, who are with us today, working on Kansas. Similar building. It's also been done in a similar way by phases. This wing is currently complete. This wing is in stages of interior demolition. This stage is under design. So we looked at that for examples. And a strategy employed there, this part right here is the existing Capitol building, kind of crucifix form. New underground mechanical vaults built in the corners to service the building, and then an underground expansion out in front of the building. So this becomes an at-grade entrance into the building, handles loading, handles all those visitor services, classrooms, auditorium space. And then the new mechanical vaults, which I showed you that picture of earlier, can be the size they need to be and then service the building. An interesting part about how these old historic buildings are laid out is you typically have that kind of crucifix central corridor system. And that's a very historic space, very difficult to cross with ductworks. So you end up having to feed your mechanical electrical systems vertically. So you will come in from something in a corner of the building and then feed in that way and then feed vertically versus trying to feed all the way across the building, which you may do with a newer building. Or some of the new buildings you may feed right down the corridor system and into them. Those are really not options with these historic buildings, particularly with the large rotunda space. So they're their own difficulties. This is a sketch of the Kansas Capitol. This was the addition out in front of the building. The stair and everything on top, still historically the way it was, but this provides that at-grade entrance loading dock over in this area. Here's a school bus you can see starting to drive up. And then here it is preparing for the stonework. So very little impact at all to the historic Capitol building itself. A nice example. Which brings us to ours, the Minnesota State Capitol. 100-year-old building. It's had its years. It's had its use. It's had its abuse. So how do we move forward with this building? Do we just try to fix what needs to be fixed, which in cases some of the mechanical units, air, life safety, some of those items, and how do we approach that? So we've advocated taking the same kind of a bold step Cass Gilbert did back in 1896. Really try to look at how this building functions and what it means to the state. It's a legacy building for the state, probably the most historically significant building in the state, and it's also nationally significant, and it's one of the top state considered one of the top state capitals in the country. So we're looking comprehensive approach that solves all of the identified needs for this building, as well as brings it up to current codes and expectations. Kind of a tall task. This is an existing site plan, and I show you this to you for orientation. Here's the building itself, Aurora Avenue, and the loop through the Porte Cochere, and parking lots in the back of it, and then the Capitol Mall. One of the things we're looking at is a small underground expansion in this area, which I'll show you, and then Aurora Avenue coming down around the bottom. As you know, there's that two tiers of steps. There's a big south monumental stair and a second tier of steps. We're bending Aurora Avenue down around that. So that's just as for orientation. And I do this one, too. I'm going to get into this plan in greater detail, but I want to show you this for orientation. This is a current basement level of this building. The tunnel comes through the building right down through here like this. Here's the Rathskeller, the kitchen I talked about under the north stairs. We're in a room right above this part of it, and we're going to go into this mechanical room, and I'll show you the mechanical system that feeds this area of the building as well. Okay? And this is our proposed plan. We expand mechanical vaults out here. These are currently electrical vaults. We expand them in the back. We do underground VIP parking and drop-off, secure parking. and underground secure receiving back here. We open up that central corridor space. You can start to see in here, and I'll show you some when we go down. There's the rotunda. Here's that corridor that wraps around that you see here. This is that central space as you see on either side of it. You know the little metal stairs that go down into the tunnels now. Up above those are those great stone stairs that go down. That's this space. That space is described by the structure of the building, which goes all the way down to the foundation, to the ground of this building. So hidden within all of this stuff down below when you're in there is this kind of grand space. And this is our approach to what we're looking at. And then here's the underground expansion. We start by moving the tunnel south of the building. This is a new tunnel. Connects to SOB tunnel, to the judicial tunnel. You can start to see here where this other tunnel comes in. So that moves that out from bisecting the building. We do an underground expansion here under the grass where light wells into office space. But then underneath the south stair, we do a large auditorium space, about 500-seat space. So that becomes kind of the core of what this public entrance is. These are the new entries into that building I showed you. Restrooms, classroom. So all those school bus loads of kids come in. Here's that lobby they come into. Here's that lobby they come into. Historical Society offices. They can use the restrooms, get gathered in a classroom, get oriented, and then move up to the building in an orderly manner. Now, one thing this auditorium space underneath the south stair gives us is it gives us a variety of things. It gives us something for today, say, State of the State. It gives us a bigger space for that kind of thing. More public can be there. 500 people would be quite different. It also gives us swing space for when we do restoration of the building. That was one of the issues earlier as we approached this, is there really was no swing space. And there was concern about, as this project proceeded, where do people go, who doesn't come back, and where do they end up? This is part of our initial construction, this space here. So that becomes permanent swing space, so to speak. This also then becomes swing space for our chambers. So as we proceed with each of the wings, this becomes set up for the House chamber, and then secondly becomes set up for the Senate chamber. So all that business of the government can remain in this building, adjacent to this building, as we go through this process. And that's something we've heard many times in interviews, is people really wanted to keep that business of session going on in this building. We talked about trying to do construction between sessions. The difficulty of that is that session calendar isn't necessarily fixed. It's generally fixed, not specifically fixed. And with special sessions and all of that kind of mushing around, it becomes very difficult and very expensive construction-wise to move people in and out. We're trying to look at something that's very cost-effective. It starts, it moves through, it's done. So I'm going to go back. This is that plan a little bit larger now. Here's the lobby area, the restrooms, the classroom. These are the new circulation underneath the south stair here. These are office space. We're looking at, when this is done, being able to take all its Senate minority offices from the state office building, bring them over here. That opens up 40,000 square feet in the state office building. All the Senate offices are here. They all have windows. This is that corridor system there. We replace those wonderfully metal stairs that come down and bisect the corridor now with stairs that are much more historically reminiscent of the current stairs that we've got in the building that stack up here. We've got a rotunda space. We've got a nice clear circulation. You move back into the Rathskeller. We have additional student dining and private dining back in these areas. Right now, when you have those tours come in, they're eating their box lunches, they're sitting in the corridor, they're sitting in the rotunda, they're sitting on stairs. There's a better way to do that. We're also looking at additional hearing rooms, and we're looking at removing the columns in those rooms so we have freestanding hearing spaces, and I'll show you some of those spaces when we're down below. And then we've got, this is the receiving, feeds into plant management, security, feeds over here and into secure ways to move up into the office, up into the governor space and some of those places. So again, here's that new tunnel connection coming through. The tunnel now also benefits from these skylights, light wells, because it gets natural light. I'll show you some sketches of some other ones. That's kind of fun. Yep. This is a section through. There's that space under the stair. You simply take the stone off, mark it, restructure it, put it back in place. And you'll see some of that on the tour. This is what those spaces do look like then. Keep that in mind as we go through it. Corridor space, this is what it can be. This is happens to be a sketch from Kansas. So the underground additions, front and back. Underneath that, front one, also mechanical space and media facilities. This is happens to be Kansas, but very similar notion for ours. Move that tunnel outside the building. You get natural light down into it. You understand where you are. You set your place by here's the existing building. You know where you are. And then you're getting light into these areas. So that's kind of the notion. Then the trick is, how do you get it done? So I'm going to take you through the three steps of implementation. We start out, first step of construction is that exterior construction exterior to the building and underground. So we do the areas in the back that accept the new mechanical systems, the secure parking, secure receiving, and all of this piece out in front. We see that as a two-year construction sequence. So within the first 2 years, then, all the exterior site work is done, all the impact that way. The next two-year sequence is the east wing and the north wing, and that includes the judicial area chambers and then the house chambers. Judicial says they're fine staying in their building while this is done. So we accommodate the house chambers by setting this space up initially for them. 2 years after that, west wing and rotunda. So a six-year construction span. So when we're done, the goal is safe, energy-efficient mechanical systems, which we do not have now. Heating, venting, air conditioning meets modern expectations. Communication and technology is improved and set up for the future. We have improved safety and security. We have building accessibility. We've stopped physical deterioration and damage. We have adequate efficient space, adequate hearing rooms and office space, and we've vastly improved visitor services and amenities. This is an early sketch. It's changing quickly. We're having this colored right now. It starts to show, this is where that space I talked about is. Underneath this hill, there's a hill out there. Aurora Avenue currently cuts through here. That's down here now below those stairs. So you get new entrances, both sides of that stair, and then the light wells. So pretty minimal physical impact, and you can still come up, move into the building this way if you desire, or move in through the visitor services area.
Just in closing, let me just say that you have early copies of the brochure that we intend for public consumption. This was a result of a competition. I think it very dramatically shows the need. We hope that it's useful to you and perhaps your constituents, but you're among the early recipients of this brochure.
What question or two that I have is that we don't know what kind of resources are going to be set aside for this. I think that most people would agree that what has to be done first would be the ventilation, the wiring, all that other stuff that's 40 years old. Can these matters be segregated so that you do the ventilation, the wiring, the security first, and then later do the expansion, the visitor center, and so forth? I mean, it'd be nice to do them all in one fell swoop, but can they be segregated?
Yes.
Ms. Bierenberg.
Chairman Betzel, members of the committee, our recommendation would be if you segregate it, you would do it the other way. You'd set up the infrastructure for that expansion to take place. The old notion was that, yes, you would tackle the building initially, but what you didn't have is a place to put those people and how to do it while the building's occupied. If we just did the east wing, all those services, which you'll see in our tour, run horizontally through the building. So you would have life safety systems, you would have fresh air systems shut down in other areas of the building while you're doing that work. So the inconvenience for the occupants of the building would be quite dramatic. So it's best to set those spaces up that allow the rest of it to happen. And I think if you try to do it other ways, you end up spending money twice to get it to happen. You do temporary things, and you come back and do something else later. You may also not be able to put things where you want them to go in the first place. And you'll see some of the mechanical rooms. Initially, it was talked about, we just replace the mechanical units, use existing ductwork. I'll show you ductwork down there that after you see it, you will want to see that replaced soon. So, it's tempting to want to do that. Let's just deal with this building. This is the way you have to deal with this building.
Other questions? Sarah Olsen.
Mr. Chair, my question is, you talked about going through and pulling a lot of these interior columns. Are these structural?
We're not taking all the columns out of the building. Or I guess the chairman and then senator. In those areas, yes, they are. And if you were to pull a slice of them out in the middle, it's certainly much more complicated. If you pull them out vertically, it's less so. You pick up the load once up on top. But, yeah, that's a big project. We feel it's less expensive to do that than it is to go build another building and build hearing rooms of that size. And we're also putting them in the right location.
I believe that the plan would be that if we built new hearing rooms below, that these would not necessarily be used as hearing rooms anymore. Is that
what? Not necessarily, yes. Okay. We've interviewed most of the users of this building, and we're now, this week, coming back through and showing those space layouts. And so you'll start to see some with those layouts, but yes. And we've also looked at reorganizing the Senate offices by committee, some people say, well, you really need to get into those office areas. Yes, we're restructuring how those all work and function. And we've just been reviewing that lately. So,
other questions?
Yeah, these were never originally hearing rooms. These were actually three individual offices with a transaction counter.
You can see three different doors, and there used to be walls here.
These vaults are not original, historic. One of the things we feel is all these recessed lights are neither historic nor energy efficient. So a lot of the spaces that look like they're done cosmetically, there are things that can be improved. It's the stuff behind these walls that support it, the ductwork, the piping, the electrical systems that really need to be replaced.
This room used to be, this whole area used to be under the Department of Military Affairs, and there used to be a vault, a door right here. The vault is here, except the door's on the other side. And there used to be a door over here that actually is Senator Dibble's office, and I guess that's where the Adjutant General's office was. So these were offices back here. So, other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roblin.
What's behind those doors?
Those are just some storage, I think. Yeah. Yeah. Just. Yeah, media equipment, VA stuff, like when we get rid of that screen there that goes behind the door.
It's a hiding place.
It's a hiding place. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll open it up and you can look at it. So that's appropriate. So yeah. Other questions? Any others? Is the tour the next thing we've got to do here?
Yes.
Then okay. Tell you what. Let me just tell you what we're going to be doing next week before we. On Monday we're going to have a bill before us. Senator Higgins has the Help America Voter Act. There's an appropriation to transfer money, and it has to be done during this fiscal year. So there's some urgency to do it now rather than let it run the budget process. And I'm asking the Department of Revenue to come in here to talk about their expanded tax compliance initiative. So we'll be doing that on Monday. And then next Wednesday, a week from today, the Department of Finance will be in here. And also the legislative auditor is going to be releasing a report next week. I don't know what the report says, but it does deal with pension funds, the post-retirement funds. And we've asked them to come on in and give us a briefing on that next week. So that's next week's agenda. Anything else before we adjourn and go on the tour? Okay. If not, yes, I'm sorry.
Chairman Betzel, members of the committee, before we begin this tour, I'd just like to say some things about how we organize it. There'll be myself and then a member of my team over here, Sarah Bursett. Raise your hand, Sarah. She's one of our mechanical engineers. We'll try to corral and keep you together, and you can ask either of us questions about it. We'll be going in some spaces that are difficult to get in and out of, so keep that in mind as we go in. Feel free to ask questions, but if we can try to stay together as a group, it will go much quicker, be much more efficient use of your time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Has anybody here got keys to those rooms? So Senator Robin can take a look at what's behind there.
Sure, sir.
Okay.
I have a somewhat master key.
Okay.
It doesn't go everywhere. It goes a lot of places.
Well, see if we can open one of those rooms so we can take a.
You probably got a master.
Okay. Senator Robin.
Mr. Chair, I just wondered. I didn't hear an approximate estimate. Have you worked that one out?
Yes.
Yet?
Yes. Chairman Betzalt, members of the committee, we're in an schematic design phase. We've taken an early shot at that. We've sat down with members of the construction community and subcontractors and pull together a conceptual estimate. That estimate includes construction costs, it includes owner's costs, and includes escalation. As we found on a project like this, time has a big cost factor. Escalation is about $20 million a year. So the construction cost was, I believe, $153 million. We had soft costs, escalation on top of that. We have a $260 million request in. That's midpoint of construction, all inclusive, includes contingencies, pretty much a full package deal. We're also looking at a delivery process that's construction manager at risk. So the end of design development phase, we have a construction manager on board early at the end of design development phase to give a guaranteed maximum price. Take on the risk.
Sam Roebling.
That is proposed over 6 years.
Correct.
One of the things, it's my understanding that if the desire is to go ahead and start the construction, there's been a request from the governor's office to not have anything done in the front until after September 08, which coincides, by the way, with the National Republican Convention that's going to be in town. He doesn't want to bring some dignitaries over to the Capitol and have a big hole in the front yard. So, okay, yes. Anything else? Okay, if not, I'll adjourn the meeting, and then, as I say, we'll take a tour. Thank you very much.
8 million a year.